All right, we pull the March 7th, 2017 to start with. I'm not sure what that's all about, but anyway, March 7th, 2023, Transportation Finance and Policy Committee meeting to order, and we do have a quorum, and Representative Petersburg, would you like to move the minutes?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do move the minutes of March 3rd.
Representative Petersburg moves the minutes for March 3rd. Do we have any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? The motion passes. And we move on now to 1997, House File 1997, with Representative Chair Hornstein, with a recommendation to be referred to Ways and Means Committee. Chair Hornstein, would you like to move
Thank you very much. So we'll do 1997 first. Is that
yes, sir.
Our situation? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1997 is various technical corrections, and for the new folks, you know, there used to be a time, I was just talking to our staff about this, you know, there used to be a time where we would bring these bills up and, you know, there would be all of this mystery around it and what are we doing here? But in recent years, we've become a little bit more transparent that these next two bills are vehicles by which we will attach our larger bills too. And so that's really what this is. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there any questions? Seeing none, any closing comments, Chair Hornstein?
What's that?
Any closing comments?
Thank you. This will help our process significantly, and I think it's a good bipartisan.
Thank you very much. So with that, to renew my motion that House File 1997 be recommended and referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes. Now we go on to 1998, recommendation to be placed on the General Register. So, Chair Hornstein, would you like to move your bill and get it before the committee?
Thank you. I would like to move that. And members, I do want to maybe get into a little bit more of the substance of this bill than the last one. So you'll notice on 1.8, we're changing shall be to are. That is a technical correction, and clearly this was something that was flagged and needed to be changed. So I ask the committee support.
Thank you for that in-depth discussion, Chair Hornstein. Any questions for the chair? All right, seeing none, Chair Hornstein, would you like to say anything else about the bill?
No, would appreciate your support. And again, this will help our process significantly.
Thank you very much. Seeing none, no further discussion, I renew my motion that House File 1998 be recommended be placed on the General Register. All those in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? Motion passes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, members. Vice Chair Tapke for chairing, and we're playing musical chairs here. The next bill on our agenda is House File 1350, and we will move this bill to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. Representative Tapke, I believe you have two author's amendments. One is labeled A1, and if you want to share with the committee the content of the A1 amendment.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. So the A1 and the A2 are just technical changes. So this bill was intended to be laid over, and we were talking about doing a was previously laid over, and we were talking about putting together a larger omnibus bill for policy, but we decided with, as I understand the Senate's input, that we would like to move these to the House floor individually. And so these are a couple of technical corrections between A1 and A2 that we were looking to make in the next round of things when it came back as part of a larger bill. So this in line page 3, line 25, it just asks for have after has puts intentionally, which gives a little comfort language in this A1 amendment.
Thank you. Well, we'll take these individually. Yep. Is there a discussion to the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All of those opposed, the motion prevails. To the A2, is there any discussion of the A2? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed, the motion prevails. We now have House File 1350 as amended before us. Vice Chair Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is the DVS technical policy bill and makes a number of corrections as we went through last time. So I just look for everyone's support in moving this this bill forward.
Thank you, Vice Chair Tabke. Are there any discussion? Okay. Any closing comments? Thank you. Laid it out, but if you have anything additional to say.
No, this will be coming back up on the House floor, so just if anyone has any questions or needs anything, please talk to me in the meantime.
Okay, great. But a reminder that the motion will be to refer House File 1350 as amended to the Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law Committee. So that
yes.
is the motion.
Thank you.
And any final discussion on the motion? Okay, seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. You're on your way to judiciary. Yeah. Members, we were going to take up next House File 2045. I was going to just ask our Vice Chair Tabke to stay where he is. However, we don't believe we have the Met Council here in the room yet. So without them, maybe we could do 2045. Probably should give them the courtesy. So I think I do see Representative Torkelson here, however, and I do see many of the people here for the Quarters of Commerce bill. So why don't we go now to House File 1822, Representative Torkelson. Representative Torkelson, welcome back to the committee where you have had a lot of impact over the years. And I am particularly grateful for your work on this bill. You've worked hard on this again for a number of years, and maybe this will be the year we enact it into law. So our motion here is to lay this bill over, and we will include it in an omnibus bill at the end of the month. And I believe you have a couple of author's amendments. So welcome to the committee, and very excited to see you and excited to hear the latest version of the Quarters of Commerce fix-it bill.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a great pleasure to be back in the Transportation Committee. A lot of familiar faces and a few new ones. And, Mr. Chair, before we dive into this, I first have to thank you for your work on Quarters of Commerce. I think it's pretty common knowledge that without your impetus early on, this program would not even exist. It's been quite successful over the years in many ways. I think we've, over time, it's accommodated around $2 billion of expenditures on highway projects across the state. And it has demonstrated that it is valuable. That projects that would otherwise languish for a variety of reasons have a chance of being funded. And my work on this is a result of some hiccups along the way where it hasn't always been a smooth path forward. And my objective really is to put this program in the shape where legislators see it as being valuable, see it as being fairly administered, and that, in my mind, in the long term, will attract funding to the program. And without the funding, the program doesn't do anything. So if we can make this, and I hope that this everyone sees that this the steps being taken here are really to improve the program, make it more fair and equitable, and likewise then attract more funding as we go forward in time. We probably should do the amendments, Mr. Chair, to get the bill in the shape I would like.
Mr. Chair, would you like me to move that, those
Yes, that would be great. Thank you, Representative Petersburg. So we'll move the A2, I believe, first.
I move the A2 amendment.
A2 amendment is moved. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This broadens the ability of the department to use some more funds on project readiness and development, a little more flexibility for the department as they administer the program. If you have any questions, I have an expert witness
Great.
With me.
Are there any questions to the A2? And again, it's an author's amendment. Representative Carlson getting, Torkelson is getting the bill in the shape we'd like to consider. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Torkelson. And so our next one is labeled A3.
And I'll move that, Mr. Chair, as well.
Representative Petersburg moves the A3. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. During the negotiations over this bill last session, there were some accommodations made for the outer ring counties. It really has to do with allowing them to submit projects. This is a project dense part of the state, and it made sense to add these counties. We inadvertently left some out of the list. This is just really putting the bill back in the shape it was at the end of session last year.
Thank you for that. And again, it sort of reminds me, I wanted to make a little comment that, you know, we've had a pretty consistent position on this in the House, thanks to Representative Torkelson's leadership, you know, dating back a number of years, but we haven't really been able to, you know, get this across the finish line in negotiations. So I'm glad you raised that question. Is there discussion to the A3? Representative Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Torkelson. Why is ANOCA removed?
It's actually listed elsewhere in the bill, is my understanding. Mr. Burris can probably clarify that.
Good catch, Representative
Cagle. Yeah, Mr. Burris. Mr. Chair and members, ANOCA and Carver are both listed in the portion of the language that's not being removed by the amendment. So they remain in the list, and then the rest of the counties are just deleted, and then a couple more are added just for ease of addition.
Thank you.
Thank you for catching that, Chair Cagle. Thank you for the explanation, Mr. Burris. Okay, any further discussion of the A3? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed. The motion prevails. To the bill, as amended, Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will cover some of the highlights of the bill without going into every detail. Number one, when the Corridors of Commerce program was originally established, there was a map devised at that time that identified the stretches of highway across the state that are eligible for Corridors funding. That has gotten somewhat dated. So in this bill, instead of trying to update that map here in the legislature, there was pretty good agreement among interested parties that we would use the national highway system map that's updated by the feds on a regular basis. The biggest difference between the existing map and the national highway map is that this national highway map does include a few more stretches of highways across the state, especially in rural Minnesota, that would be eligible for the program. Secondly, the core of the bill really is to address the issue of regional balance. Some may remember an announcement of project selection a few years ago that was quite controversial because the projects were all kind of concentrated, most of them anyway, concentrated in and around the metro area. The department didn't do anything wrong. That's the way the rules read, and they followed the rules. I'm not accusing the department of any any misbehavior whatsoever. But for those of us in greater Minnesota, we felt that there needed to be something done to make it a little more feasible to get make sure that projects are spread across the state. This bill divides those potential projects into three pots, the first pot being surrounded by the Beltway in the metro area. The second pot would be a kind of a donut around that metro Beltway, 40 miles in width, and finally the third pot is the rest of the state. The percentages are somewhat flexible. As we know, the size of projects is varied and you can't pin them down to the last dollar, so we're allowing a little flexibility for the department to fit projects in to these three categories. The other issue we had with that last allocation, the door was pretty wide open as to how many projects could be submitted and who could submit them. That resulted in a very large number of projects being submitted. Many of them were projects that were, you know, you'd have a big project and then you'd have smaller projects within that big project. The bottom line was there was hundreds of projects that the department was required to evaluate. Many of them were not necessarily carefully thought out as far as getting an estimate of their cost, and the department had to spend significant amounts of money just to put the list together. In this bill, we restrict somewhat that ability to submit projects by narrowing down the different groups that can submit projects and narrowing down the number they can submit. That has actually gone forward. The department could do much of this on their own. They've already taken a set of projects, and we may want to hear from the department as to how that went. But this kind of would codify that process. The only thing I've missed here, Mr. Chair, is we do need to change the effective dates on a couple of these sections because the department has already done some of this work. We'll get you that information so when you put this into your bill, you can make that correction. It's very technical. I don't think we need to try and fix it right now.
Thank you. Well, thank you for the overview. Before we get into testimony, I want to see if anyone has any questions of the author at this point, and we can have some more committee discussion. I will say, Representative Brogelson, you know, there's certain moments that you remember, and I remember the exact place. I don't know the time or the year, but I remember that you and I were walking on the west, down the steps on the west side of the Capitol, you know, past the governor's office outside, and we were having a conversation about this latest round of, or that particular round that you referred to, where you were very concerned about the fact that so few projects, if any, were in outside of the metro, where the, I think Wright County got one on 94. But that was it, and you were animated, and I do remember that very clearly. So I'm glad that I think the origins of this bill were in that conversation. Any other comments, members?
We're going to have testimony?
Yes, we're going to, yeah. We can have comments now, too, and larger discussion later. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, I want to thank former Chair Torkelson for doing all of the hard work the last couple of years. And you know, it's a lot of back and forth between various groups. And I'm trying to think, maybe, Representative Nelson, were you on the committee when we started Corridors of Commerce?
Yes.
I think you and I and Mr. Chair, I think we're the only three that are left that when we created that, and that was quite a innovation that kind of allowed us to really look at commerce as one of the rationale for why we determine projects. And I think it's been a very good thing. It's been difficult funding it over the years, but I think it's improved. And one of the challenges we've had has been in the actual selection of all the projects that are there, and I think this is one of those examples where it's going to be beneficial, it's going to be a clear for those that are participating, and I think it will have a positive comment into the future. With that, Mr. Chair, I'll leave to testifiers, and we can talk later.
Great, thank you. Well, let's go right into the public testimony. Our first testifier is Shane Zart from the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Welcome back to the committee. Good to see you. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Shane Zart with the firm Flaherty & Hood and representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. And I'm glad we had as much discussion as we have even before I testified here, because I think that what came out of that is that this program does have a lot of history now. In fact, I think it's probably having its 10th birthday pretty soon here. So it was created in 2013, Mr. Chair, when you were chair at that time. Though the successes that it's had are to fund the types of projects, as Representative Torkelson said, that may not have otherwise had a chance for consideration. But others, too, have mentioned that this bill in particular is a returner from last year. So I admit that some of what I'm saying today is not original, because I went back and watched what we were saying last year about this exact same bill. And one of the things on the regional balance structure in Representative Torkelson's bill, the phrase that I used is, the Representative Torkelson might be on to something here. And we still think he is. From the perspective of our members of the Greater Minnesota Cities, you know, a number of them are members of corridor coalitions throughout the state, have projects that connect their communities to each other, to the metro area. Some of them have been, you know, awaiting improvement for decades. And corridors of commerce has been the mechanism to make progress in big chunks or small chunks over time. But you know, one of the challenges in the current program is that, you know, when corridors was created in 2013 and until it was, some of the program was modified in 2017, the early on the program was able to do things both big and small. And I think that to put some numbers to that, from 2013 to 2017, about $330 million ran through the program. And that helped fund about 27 projects. And those were projects big and small. Some of them were just $1 million where we couldn't do a full project, but we put a little money toward engineering or environmental or land acquisition to keep a project moving forward, put it on the shelf for make it more eligible for future consideration through corridors or for federal money eligibility and that. But since 2018, in the 2017-18 project selection round, about $850 million dollars was put into the program, and that got out to just 7 projects. So since 2017-18, the program has been more designed to do big things all at once, accomplish huge projects. And don't get me wrong, some of those projects we love. They got done a lot of projects, including Highway 14, 23, some of the ones we've been talking about for decades and are sick of hearing about, frankly. But we're happy to see the A2 amendment go on today as well, because that amendment is meant to restore some of that ability into the program, give MnDOT some discretion to be able to do project readiness activities in addition to large construction projects all at once. So I know we've got some other testifiers here, so I will address the structure of the regional balance approach that this bill takes by separating core metro projects from kind of metro adjacent projects from projects that are out at more truly rural projects, but by preserving the underlying scoring structure of that was in corridors of commerce. I think at one point, Representative Torkelson, I called it somewhat of an artful approach, because it took a bill that was actually some of MnDOT's suggestions, addressed some of their concerns about the number of projects that were requiring to be scored, that they wanted more direction on the regional balance front. Last year, Representative Torkelson built on top of a foundation that MnDOT built in their Corridors of Commerce policy bill and added this kind of three-ringed approach that I think we'll have to see how it plays out, of course, in practice. But I think our perspective right now is it's an improvement on the current system in terms of better making rural projects able to compete for dollars. And so I will leave it with that, but I do want to thank you, too, for the other amendment. The A3 amendment restores some of the bill back to some of what the stakeholder discussion was at the end of last session. So I think with the addition of both those amendments, we've got a good product here, at least something to carry forward with. something that we're ready to stand behind and think can be a positive development for the program. And I mentioned that Corridors turns 10 this year, and hopefully this sets it up for the next 10 years and beyond. So thank you, and I'm happy to stick around for any questions, or I'll turn over to the next set of testifiers.
Maybe, thank you. Maybe we'll have a gathering in New Ulm to celebrate the 10th anniversary. I don't know. Somewhere along Highway 14. I don't see Representative Brand here, but okay. Yeah, questions of Mr. Zart. Okay, thank you for your testimony and for your work on this. Next is Margaret. Who? Margaret Donahoe is here. Good. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed. And Ms. Donahoe was also part of that original cohort of people that helped to develop this program. So good to see you again. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. Our members work on highway projects all across the state, and we also have worked with corridor coalitions for many years. And I really want to thank Representative Torkelson for bringing this bill forward to make some really needed improvements to this program, which has been really valuable over the years. I also want to thank Chair Hornstein for his work in creating this program back in 2013. I remember all those conversations. And, you know, I think a lot of this came out of the fact that larger highway projects with a higher price tag had struggled for decades. There were communities advocating for needed safety and mobility improvements in really major corridors for literally decades. The problem was that putting one big project into the budget for any one MnDOT district made it really difficult to do all the other work they needed to do. So the programs would continue to get pushed down the road, so to speak. And we didn't have what some other states have, like Wisconsin has a major projects commission to deal specifically with major projects. So the creation of this program with a focus on commerce and freight movement was really important to allowing some of those bigger projects to find a way to get programmed and to get done. Some of the big projects that have been funded through this program include the expansion of Highway 610, of course the expansion of Highway 14, which was one of the big impetuses behind this. A MinPass lane addition on 494, a MinPass lane addition on 252, lane additions on I-94 going north towards St. Cloud, and of course expansion of Highway 23, which had been something that advocates had been working on for many, many years. So this has been a really critical program for making progress on really important corridors around the state and really improving safety in a lot of these areas. So again, we want to thank Representative Torkelson for continuing to improve this program by addressing issues that had been raised about geographic balance and equity, by making the process easier for MnDOT to administer, and you know, really continuing to support this program. We know also that the continued success of this program does depend on funding. This program has never had a dedicated source of funding. It has always been sort of hit and miss when bonds were authorized or not. So I also want to thank Representative Petersburg for his bill to provide $100 million every year for this program, because it does take consistent, reliable funding to do the planning, for local governments to come up with matching funds. That there's always a local cost participation element, even in trunk highway projects. So it really does help a lot to have consistent, dependable funding, and we hope that that will also be part of this. So thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony, and is there any questions of Ms. Donahoe? Okay, thank you. And finally, we have Commissioner John Johnson joining us from Itasca County.
Good morning.
Welcome to the committee. Thank you for traveling down here. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is John Johnson. I'm a Itasca County Commissioner for District 3. And I'd like to thank you, Chair Hornstein, and members of the committee for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today. I'm here to speak about House File 1822, of course, because we feel that the bill would improve the Quarters of Commerce program by taking a unique approach to a regional balance, excuse me, that would benefit the projects, but also to make it more likely that rural projects would receive funding as well. This is crucial for my particular area. For more than 60 years, we've been working towards the improvement and expansion of Highway 169 that connects the entire Iron Range. In 1958, the first expansion of the highway began with the goal of connecting the Iron Range and ensuring that both families and commerce could travel safely from one end of the other, or to the other, which is a total of 60 miles. Today, we're still waiting for the completion of a dangerous section of the Cross Range Expressway, which is 8 miles, and is between the towns of Taconite and Penn-Gilly. From 2013 to 2017, the Quarters of Commerce program did provide some dollars to $10.2 million for a small section of the highway. But since the program selection process was modified in 2017, projects in my particular area have difficulty scoring high enough to receive funding. I'd also like to share that I support the A2 amendment because it would restore MnDOT's ability to use the Quarters of Commerce dollars for project development as well. The final stage of the Cross Range Expressway is in desperate need of additional dollars before it can be shovel ready. The legislature appropriated $500,000 in 2021 to support the early stages of this work. Those dollars are being put to work as we speak, but they don't quite advance the engineering or environmental process far enough to make our project eligible for future rounds of state or federal funding. The A2 amendment puts in place a structure that would advance those projects like ours and otherwise would not exist. In closing, I would like to thank Representative Torkelson for bringing this bill forward and taking a thoughtful approach to the program. I urge you to pass the bill this year. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for allowing me to appear before you today.
Thank you so much, Commissioner. Are there any questions of Commissioner Johnson? Thank you. And is there anyone else in the audience that wants to testify on House File 1822? Okay. Members, any further discussion, questions, comments? We are laying the bill over. So, Representative Kraft, and then Representative Elkins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Torkelson. As a new legislator here, I think it's really an interesting program to focus the discussion of an investment of transportation around commerce, and I'm supportive. As I was reading and thinking about it, I was reflective of that we come from a society that is so focused on cars and automobiles that Quarters of Commerce is applied to trunk highways, and I'm not saying that that's incorrect, that's fine. But we can also think about Quarters of Commerce in different ways, about how we can construct transit solutions or well as multimodal biking and pedestrian infrastructure that improves commerce in a more narrow sense. So I just comment that I think it's a good program and it's an interesting lens, and we should think broadly about and differently about commerce as we move forward in transportation.
Thank you, Representative Kraft, for those comments. And, we are going to hear later in the next couple of weeks about a new initiative that Representative Norris and I and others are working on to do exactly what you're saying. And then, of course, you have a land use bill, and Representative Senator Mira is going to have something along those lines as well, vehicle mile traveled. So you're absolutely right, and I think that what this Quarters of Commerce program has inspired, in my mind, is when we look at the IIJA bill, there's a program called Safe Roads and Streets for All. And I think that what's exciting about that is it's looking at roads in a different way. The in terms of what you're talking about. And Highway 65 is a classic example because you have safety improvements, you have, you know, freight issues, some of the things that we're talking about that are traditional for corridors, but it's also a transit corridor. It's also a corridor where we've had a lot of pedestrian deaths. You know, there should be accommodations for non-motorized transportation there too. So we're working on some legislation to, you know, maybe call it a corridors for multimodal and safety issues. And so I think all, we have so many different needs and each, you know, a project has its own unique characteristics. But I really think increasingly what we're seeing, and, you know, I had a good conversation, a couple conversations just this week with members who are, you know, in Carver and Scott County in particular, they're really talking about safety. They're really talking about pedestrian safety. They're really talking about, you know, looking at roads in a much more, you know, broader way as you described. So, you know, this is I think we've, you know, charted a course here 10 years ago that I think is continuing to evolve. And Margaret, Ms. Donahoe had talked about the safety issues too. I mean, Highway 14, I mean, was, I think Representative Torkelson and the others, Representative Petersburg, know so many crashes, so many fatalities and injuries. So we've got to really look at how we maintain and fix these roads for safety purposes. It's critically important. So thank you for raising that. I appreciate that. And looking forward to your bill, too. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I would likewise would like to also thank Representative Torkelson for all the work that he's done on this over the past several years. And I actually shared some of his frustrations about allocations in the last round and how much of the money went to kind of collar counties around the metro rather than truly being in greater Minnesota, though I may have been dissatisfied for slightly different reasons than he did. But I think you've got a workable framework here that, you know, subject to the caveat that we can play with the percentages, I really appreciate what you've done with this proposal. A couple of other things I'd like to point out. I think Margaret Donahoe made some very good points that. I think we need to be reminded that this program has always been funded from Trunk Highway Fund revenues, so we've never taken money for from other sources, and so it's not actually putting, you know, new transportation money into the system. All we're doing is creating a carve-out for major projects that might not otherwise ride to the top of the list. But we're not addressing, I don't think any of us should have an illusion that we're actually addressing the funding shortfall with this bill. And last, I'd like to observe that the last round of this, Bloomington actually won the lottery. We had, you know, $200 million for, you know, the Mint Pass Lane on 494, another $200 million to completely redo the interchange at, not even completely redo the interchange at 494 and 35W, which is one of the worst performing intersections in the whole state. But even with $400 million, it's not actually enough to complete that project. And with inflation, I think we need to reflect the realization that large projects in the metro are very, very expensive to do. And if our goal really is to, you know, put these kinds of projects over the top, we're going to have to look at the revenue caps as well.
Thank you. Many good points raised, and I think particularly Representative Elkins, that yes, this doesn't solve the funding shortfall. And in fact, if we're to you know, continue in the past, this has been through the bonding process, and you know, we're at the credit limit here with our trunk highway system, and so that's going to require some additional revenue. So thank you for those points. Others? Oh, Representative Petersburg, sorry. See you.
No, not a problem, Mr. Chair. Thank you. I just wanted to again say thank you to Chair Torkelson. Over the last few years, I'm very much aware of the amount of work that he's done. He and I had many discussions with it, and it isn't necessarily the challenges that he's had with other agencies, but sometimes just with our counterparts in the Senate, just trying to help them understand, you know, what is needed here. And I think everybody has said this already, this was not intended to fix the financial side of of the funding mechanism, but rather to make sure that the program that is created here has become more effective and more efficient into the future. The discussion around funding will come at a later date with that, and so I think that's important to know. As I said, I'm one of the co-authors of this bill, as so are quite a few of the members on this side of the table, because we think it's an important piece for the state as a whole, because it does allow for projects to move forward in a different context. And that I think is an important piece. And Mr. Chair, I thank you for saying that it will be in your omnibus bill. I appreciate that, because I think it's important enough for us to make sure that it does move forward. And we'll keep working on the funding too. And hopefully you'll get a big enough target that you can add my bill to it as well. But thank you, Mr. Chair. Appreciate that.
Thanks, everyone, for a great discussion. And, you know, you mentioned also, Representative Torkelson, one of the early maps. And, this is not appropriate for the record, but I do, if anyone wants to hear the story of the very, very first Corridors of Commerce map and the then-governor's reaction to it, which does involve an impression, an impersonation, I would be happy to share that offline with anyone. So, with that, members, any closing comments, Representative Torkelson?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for bringing this bill to the committee. I appreciate it. You mentioned the other side of the street. I think hopefully with your work and cooperation, we can help them understand the value of this and make it be law in the end. I think it's appropriate that I mention there's been a number of mentions of the Highway 14 projects that have put us on the way to completing Highway 14 from Rochester to New Ulm. Just learned yesterday that the former mayor of New Ulm, Bob Boisman, who was very active in the effort to fund Highway 14, has passed away. He was 77 years old, but did a tremendous amount of work on that project. He and I didn't always see eye to eye, I have to say, but he was very dedicated to his cause, and I just wanted to mention to honor him in his passing. With that, Mr. Chair, thanks again for hearing the bill.
Thank you for mentioning that, and I know New Ulm has always been a real strong ally of ours in transportation. I know the newspaper there has always editorialized strongly for transportation funding, so I've always appreciated the community there. With that, members, House File 1822, as amended, is laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Members, we're now going to go to our final bill on the agenda, House File 2045, the Transit Safety and Transit Service Intervention Project, was laid over last time we heard it. And even though the author is not here, he's Representative Vice Chair Tabke is presenting a bill in another committee now, but I know we'll be back shortly. We do have a couple of items of business before we vote on the bill. I will move that House File 2045 be back on our agenda for consideration with a motion to move it to Ways and Means today. But before we do that, there are a couple of issues that we did not address last time, and that's why the bill is before us. Number one is a fiscal note. And so that fiscal note has been prepared. It is available for inspection. And then Representative Petersburg had, I thought, an excellent suggestion last time, and that was, again, before we consider the bill further, to hear from, once again, the Metropolitan Council and very specifically the new police chief for the council. And so we have the chief with us today, and I'm very pleased about that, Chief Ernest Morales III, and his title is Director for Security and Police Services at Metro Transit Police. So, members, I think I'd like to have Chief Morales III testify first, and then we can further discuss the bill. Hopefully Representative Tabke will be here for that. And again, we do have the fiscal note, and we're not going to we were not going to move the bill without a fiscal note. We have it today, and if there's any questions about that, we can consider that. So, with that, Chief Morales, and I don't know if Mr. Shetnin wants to make any comments as well. Mr. Shetnin, did you want to say anything first, or should we go right to the chief?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, Judd Shetnin, I'm the Government Affairs Director at the Metropolitan Council, and we appreciate the opportunity to discuss, continue the discussion on transit safety and security. I am very excited to be able to bring our incoming Chief of Police, Ernest Morales III. I know that the committee is very interested in hearing from him as well. The chief has been very busy working on his licensure with the Post Board, and so up until he receives that licensure, he is our director. But we anticipate that very soon, once he gets that licensure, we'll be able to refer to him as Chief Morales. And we look forward to working with you on Representative Tabke's bill as well. But the chief will be talking not so much about the bill, but a little bit more about his background and getting to know the committee members. So with that, I'm going to pause here and turn it over to Mr. Morales.
Well, Director Morales, thank you for being here. We really appreciate your stepping up and coming to our community, at an important time. And I've heard many good things about you and your credentials. So we really look forward to a great partnership. And as I'm sure Mr. Shetnin has shared with you, our Transportation Committee has been very engaged over a number of years, not only in funding and supporting transit projects, but also increasingly interested in working collaboratively on safety questions. And so the bill before us, House File 2045, takes some steps in that direction. And so we welcome you to Minnesota and the Twin Cities. And Director, look forward to your comments. So welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. Ernest Morales III. Good morning, Chair Horstein, committee members. My name is Ernest Morales III. I am currently serving as Director for Security and Police Services at Metro Transit Police Department. I appreciate this opportunity to meet with you and introduce myself as I get started with Metro Transit. Before I continue with my testimony, I want to note for the committee that I am in the process of obtaining my post license in Minnesota, so I am not speaking as the MTPD police chief today. I will assume the chief role once I am a licensed peace officer in the state of Minnesota. I am new to Minnesota, but I come to Metro Transit with over 30 years of police experience. I spent most of my career in the NYPD, New York City Police Department, rising in the leadership ranks before leaving the NYPD to become the first deputy police commissioner in the Mount Vernon Police Department. My time at the NYPD included serving as a commanding officer of Transit Bureau District 12 in the rank of deputy inspector. In this role, I supervised nearly 180 police officers across the transit district that included 42 subway stations in the Bronx. We were responsible with the safe and secure transportation of 500,000 commuters each day. Through all my roles, my approach to policing has been centered on building relationships with the community. Typically, there are three times when a person comes into a police station. They are the victims of a crime, they have committed a crime, or they are there to receive bad news. I have set out to change this leading initiatives to build relationships between police and community members in a proactive manner, especially young people within our communities. I want people to see police as part of the community, to see us as neighbors, so all community members trust us and understand the work we are doing to help keep our community safe. This is the start of my second week at Metro Transit. In my short time here, I have seen challenges facing our transit system firsthand. I've been out riding the system, visiting facilities, and getting to know our officers and frontline staff. From what I've seen, the challenges on Metro Transit are not caused by transit, but rather reflect broader trends in society that are made especially visible on transit. This includes nuances that degrade the customer experience, like smoking on trains and buses. And this includes more serious offenses, often driven by increased illegal drug activity in public places. But transit is a small footprint inside larger communities, and that is why partnerships with other agencies and organizations are going to be critical to addressing the issues we are seeing. My focus in my first few weeks at Metro Transit is securing my post license. But as I hone my vision for how I want to lead the MTPD, this includes building on work identified as in Metro Transit Safety and Security Action Plan. I want to make sure that the Metro Transit Police Department is doing its part to make sure this action plan isn't just a piece of paper. The outcomes of the action plan must be visible to all our customers and employees, and the police department plays a key role in this. In particular, a central component of the action plan is increasing official presence in our system. This includes investing in police presence, hiring private security officers at key locations to supplement police resources, and contracting services from community-based organizations focused on violence prevention among youth. This also includes continued investment in Metro Transit's homeless action team that connects people experiencing homelessness to services and housing. Metro Transit has taken several steps to increase presence on our system. Shortly after endorsing the action plan, the Metropolitan Council raised police officer and community service officer rate wages, increased tuition reimbursement for the community service officers, and streamlined the hiring process. Starting in September 2022, Metro Transit began piloting the use of private security officers to supplement police presence. This supplemental security contract is managed by MTPD, so this work stays closely integrated to our department's work. The results of this pilot are leading Metro Transit to seek a broader supplemental security contract that we believe will be in place soon. That said, as you heard from Chair Zelli last week, we remain over 60 full-time officers below budgeted levels. One of my top priorities is to innovate our recruitment efforts to build up our ranks. I also see my role as supporting the work Metro Transit is doing outside the police department. For example, Metro Transit is in the process of creating a non-law enforcement group of personnel who would serve as additional visible presence and customer support. I envision these new employees working hand in glove with Metro Transit police officers to help serve as the eyes and ears of the system and to provide direct customer support to riders navigating our system. In closing, as I prepare to lead the Metro Transit Police Department, my priority will be making sure we are optimizing the resources we have now while finding new, innovative ways to recruit and retain more personnel. This work must be done through building relationships with communities and working closely with partners who can address the root causes of the problems we see on transit. I appreciate this committee's attention and efforts towards improving transit safety. As Charles Zelli stated, providing safe experience on transit is our top priority, and I look forward to working with this committee to address this important topic. Thank you, Chair. I am happy to stand for any questions.
Thank you so much, and again, welcome. Your testimony was excellent. I did live in New York for 3 years in the 80s, and the Beverly Road stop on the D train was literally in our backyard, and I commuted through Manhattan and to on the 7 line, and 74th Street, Roosevelt Avenue was my stop for my place of employment. So very familiar with the system there, and appreciate your testimony. I know we have a number of member questions already. We'll start with Representative Sensenbura.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Director Morales, for coming to speak with us today. My name is Amanda Sensenbura. I represent South Minneapolis. I have 3 light rail stops in my district. You know, the one that is currently, I think, facing the most challenges is the Lake Street station. And so I have, I guess, just one comment and then one question for you. So this weekend, I got to visit a group that is doing the violence prevention kind of community-based organization work at the light rail station. It's called Touch Outreach. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but I was impressed by the work that they were doing. You know, they say that they have about 20 folks that go out, you know, every afternoon to support kind of at the busiest times, at kind of the most conflict-ridden times, to support with violence interruption. But, you know, there was a really terrible beating at the Lake Street station last week. It was really eye-opening to hear about all of the problems that that station is facing. And, you know, I know that our we're having capacity issues, you know, within all of our police departments, but I do, you know, have questions and concerns about all of the increased private security presence. You know, for example, this Touch Outreach who has their office at the Lake Street station, you know, there's probably, it's kind of a strip mall, they were telling me that, so it's probably about 15 businesses. They were telling me that most businesses there have hired, you know, their own private security. And then we have Metro Transit with their private security. And I guess, you know, at a time where we're thinking about how are we training our police and peace officers, you know, how are we making sure that they are implementing best practices, it concerns me that then we're having this other force going out that I feel very unclear about kind of the training, you know, what they're allowed to do versus what police officers are allowed to do. So for the Metro Transit private security, can you kind of talk about what training, if any, do those individuals get, and are there differences in the services that they are able to offer versus police officers? Thank you.
Yes, as you pointed out, Lake Street Station is a problematic situation. I'm really familiar with it. I've been out there personally. I've been out there with the strip mall that you referred to. In regards to the contracted security, well, they are trained. They have approximately 120 hours worth of training for their security license. With that said, our primary focus on them is omnipresence. So any mutual aid agreements that we come up with other police departments, and especially with our security contractors, we're looking for omnipresence. We want them to be a comforting presence there to guide and instruct commuters as they come on. We understand that being on transit, being homeless, is not necessarily a crime. However, if you make our commuters uncomfortable, they tend not to use the system. So what we want to do is provide them a system where they feel safe and secure as they commute to their destination. So to your response, to your question, they're there for more of an omnipresence. If they reach a situation where a crime is taking place, that's where our officers will assist them and proceed forward with the process of arrest.
Representative Sensenmiro, follow up.
Yeah, thank you for that. You know, I guess my only question would be around the kind of the line between discomfort and real danger and a crime, you know, and I'm thinking specifically, and I know you're not talking specifically to Representative Tapke's bill, but, you know, Representative Tapke's bill is, you know, really trying to, I think, make it clear that someone who is homeless that is using a train to be warm, to sleep, who's not engaging in other activities can't be kicked off the train, that that's not a crime. And so I would want to make sure that this security, you know, who's kind of giving this omnipresence is abiding by that as well. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Representative, I hear your concerns, and we definitely want to come up with long-term strategies and solutions to help our homeless population. We're not trying to remove them and misplace them. What we're trying to do is collaborate with other agencies so that we can find long-term solutions and rectify the situation that we're now experiencing. Mr. Chair.
Thank you for your questions. Representative Petersburg is next on the list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Director Morales, thank you for coming here and with your expertise as well. As Chair Zelli had mentioned last week, he candidly admitted that the safety and security that has occurred at transit has been a failure and it needs to be kind of a shot in the arm. I guess my question to you is around the actual bill that we're having in front of us, because the legislature now is feeling like we have to step in order to make some changes here. And so I'm hoping that you are familiar enough with that bill to give us some insight as to whether or not you think that's workable. And the reason why I say that is because currently officers can kick somebody off the train, but then they just wait till the next train and then get in the next one, which really isn't always a positive outcome for it. So if you could expound upon how you see this particular bill in front of us, whether or not it works, whether or not you'd have some suggestions on improvements, that would be helpful.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Mr. Morales.
Representative, thank you for the question. And I absolutely think that the bill takes us in the right direction as it affords us an opportunity to collaborate with ambassadors on the train system that will help us guide the issues that we're dealing with. Promote a welcoming environment to commuters, giving them direction. But more importantly, once the bill is changed, it will give us, our representatives, an opportunity to write citations that our police officers currently can do. We want to be able to address this in doing fare checks and writing citations if necessary so that we start holding people that are violating our rules and regulations accountable for their actions. So I believe the more help we get in this area, the better it will be moving forward.
Thank you. Mr. Shetland, did you want to add something?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I just want to follow up on the previous question just to clarify that any type of supplemental security that we have will be unarmed. And so following up on what Director Morales said, just to be clear that we will have clear lines of authority, and so that supplemental presence will be there. And to Representative Petersburg's point, that will help us with what Representative Tapke is attempting to do with this bill as well, with those grants, in order to have that additional presence on our system. We see that as only a benefit, that having those presences will help us diminish some of the activity that we know may not be criminal activity, but it's also something that makes people uncomfortable, and that's where I think he's trying to get at with the code of conduct, making sure that is being displayed in many places, and then also having additional eyes and ears, and that welcoming presence, I think, is really important. Part of what the director said is that we want to make sure that it is a friendly service that people are comfortable using. And so, but just to Representative Spencer Murrah's point, I just want to be clear that the additional safety and security folks who will be contracted will be unarmed.
Thank you for that. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, and thank you, Mr. Chair. So continuing on a little bit with the way this bill is put forth with I think they call it a project manager or whatever the person is, in talking with Representative Tapke, he is under the impression that the Minneapolis Police Department and other police departments are willing to participate in helping stem, shall we say, the unlawful activities with that. So I'm assuming that is the case. How do you feel about that as well? Is that something that is workable? Is that something that we can count on as well?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we're currently in the process of reviewing our mutual aid agreements with police departments. I think one aspect that we want to get from internally is we want to streamline the verbiage on these agreements. Because we go across several different jurisdictions, different counties, we were all over the place. So we're trying to streamline the language so that we have a solidified mutual aid agreement. So, yes, we are looking for these partnerships. I think that, as I stated earlier in my testimony, transit is a small footprint within these communities. So there's a much larger issue that we must address, and we definitely need to collaborate with our law enforcement partners, other law enforcement partners, to get to the root cause of the issues.
Representative Petersburg, a follow-up.
Yeah, thank you. And this is just a follow-up comments, and that is that you're exactly right. And because the transit goes across these jurisdictional areas, it allows for more of the criminal element to also be able to move back and forth across those lines. And it's always a coordinated effort in order to really deal with that. And I appreciate the willingness that any presence is there to be a comfort, but there's also public expecting that presence to also be effective in enforcing our rules and regulations as well. Because without their security and feeling comfortable, they're not going to ride it. And if they're not going to ride it, it creates a much higher cost. And it's not really doing the benefit of the program that was designed for. So whatever you can do, I appreciate that. And I just think we need to continue understanding that for a lot of law-abiding citizens asking pretty please, they'll accommodate. But there are others in which they'll just utilize that for their own worst interests, shall we say. So thank you for that, and good luck to you. Thank you.
Mr. Shetland.
Mr. Chair, members of Representative Petersburg, I appreciate your comments on this. And I would just like to add, you know, that we are very hopeful that this year we'll be able to get the administrative citations bill passed. That also allows us to work with our community service officers in order to have that additional presence. I know that we haven't had this issue necessarily in the House, but we've been attempting to pass this bill to add that presence to our system. I think the first time we had it here was in 2018. And so we have been leaning in on this for many years. One of the things that we cannot do without legislative support is to pass that particular language. And so we've been attempting to do that for many years, and we're really hoping that we're going to be able to kind of cross the finish line on that one this year.
Okay, Representative Spencer Mura, and then we'll have Representative Elkins.
Thank you. So thank you for sharing, Director Morales, about your background and, you know, how you've worked in other cities and other transit systems throughout the U.S. I'm wondering if you can maybe, based on that knowledge, kind of put what we are seeing here in our metro transit system kind of in perspective. You know, the challenges that we are seeing, especially I think regarding, you know, people smoking on the trains. Is that happening in other cities across the U.S.? And are there kind of models that you would look to say this is a city, this is a transit system that has encountered similar problems and has implemented something that has worked? Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Morales.
Representative Spencer Mura. So I have vast experience with the New York City Police Department, particularly in the transit system. To your point, to your question, these are ongoing issues that exist in every transit system throughout America. How do we curtail it? The behavior has to be curtailed through a collaborative effort. So at Metro Transit, what I want to set out to is I want to get with the operational side, the operators, the bus operators, the train operators, as well as the police officers. We have to collaborate and we have to form a team. Safety Action Plan talks about the issues that we must address, but we aren't going to get them accomplished unless we work together. And what do I mean by that? I believe that because of the fact that there are certain people that ride our commuter rails and the buses that haven't been checked, they haven't been disciplined. And what I mean by this is that if a bus operator asks them to stop smoking within the trains or the buses, they may very well be putting themselves in a dangerous situation. Because we have failed to take action for such a long period of time, we have emboldened this certain crowd. It's my effort to collaborate with the police officers and the operators and to start holding individuals accountable for their negative behavior. So by doing this, I want to set my police officers out on the system with the operators, and I want to have the operators start taking the lead on enforcing these rules with the safety and security of an officer's presence there. I believe that moving forward, this will help address the situations. But the longer-term solution is to collaborate with other agencies that could then we can direct them to the services that they need. Now, given the fact that not everyone is going to seek services that are being offered, what I want to do is I want to strategically position our offices in stations where, as passengers come off, we'll then conduct fare inspections and offer them services at the same time.
hopefully this will alleviate any issues that proceed forward on system.
Representative Sensorbio, did you have a follow-up?
That's really helpful. Thank you for that answer. I guess just to kind of the second part of my question, are there cities that have implemented, you know, similar approaches that have seen success that we're kind of looking to as models? Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
Morales.
Representative, I would say that if we look at New York City, they're trying, they're working through it. They haven't finished yet. But if you go out to L.A. County in California, you'll see that what they have done is they have mutual aid agreements with several police departments where they currently track the activity of the police officers from the other police departments they are within the system. And I believe that that's really important because from my perspective as director, when we have other outside agencies conducting enforcement on our lines, if there's negative interaction, we want to be able to track that. But more importantly, we want to see what particular activity that they're producing on our lines and what long-term effects that activity has. I'm a fan and proponent of omnipresence. I believe that communities need to see uniform presence. They don't necessarily need to see enforcement action because the bottom line is we're never going to arrest our way out of these issues. We have to come up with sound, long-term solutions, and I believe partnerships within our communities and a shared responsibility is the long-term solution.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. Representative Elkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also lived in New York right out of college for 2 years, and commuted every day on the IRT Express from 86th Street to Grand Central Station. And so it was an interesting experience.
Yes.
A question for the chair, actually. I would have thought that we would hear the administrative citations bill in conjunction with this one. Do you have a plan for when we're going to hear the administrative citations bill?
Thank you very much for that question. Yeah, on Friday.
Okay.
And it just gives me an opportunity to announce that we do have an additional meeting scheduled this week, and that's 8:30 a.m. Friday. And of course, we have some weather moving in, but you know, we'll keep abreast of that situation. But we overreacted last time. Maybe we'll underreact this time. And it's going to be room five. So that's part of the request that we had from you, Representative Petersburg. You like that building. So so room five in the state office building on 8:30 on Friday, we will hear that bill. But this is a sort of a separate concept, and we're moving it separately. So any other comment? I mean, Representative Elkins, you've worked hard on this issue, too, and I want to thank you for that over the years. So any other comments? We don't have the author here, but... I'm happy to potentially answer some questions and others as well, but it is still our intention to move the bill. We don't really have time to recess and wait for him at this point, so I'll make some closing comments if no one else wants to.
Mr. Chair, we do have a second author here.
Okay. The voice of experience. I'll definitely make some closing comments and observations. But thank you, Director, and hopefully call you Chief very shortly. I appreciate your being here, especially, so new and just still getting your bearings. But we hope that we'll continue to be in contact with you. And both myself and Representative Sensenmira represent areas in which there are light rail and multiple bus routes, and I'll comment on that here in my closing comments. But we appreciate you and being here, and I look forward to our continued collaboration. Thank you, Mr. Shetland, as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so members, before we vote, Representative Sensenmira.
I would just like to make a comment on the bill, too.
Oh, okay. Let's. What we'll do here is any final comments from committee members, then I'll make a statement, and then we'll vote.
Chair, did we do the A1 amendment?
I think the bill as amended is what we'll be voting for. We amended it last time.
That's a second.
Representative Sensenmira.
Thank you. Yeah, I have had many conversations with the author of this bill. It feels odd talking about it when he's not here. But with the author of this bill, I am generally supportive of the approach. You know, a concern that I've had from the beginning is, you know, in Minneapolis, in the community that I represent, we have had, I think as a lot of people on this committee know, we've had an issue with encampments, especially growing in the last few years with COVID. And we've also had the issue, and my personal opinion, that the city is using an ineffective approach of kind of encampment sweeps. So an encampment will pop up in a community, it'll stay there for a while, and then the city will just do a sweep, move the encampment, and what we see is it doesn't solve the problem. The encampment just, you know, ends up in a different location, sometimes two blocks from where it was previously. And so, you know, I have constituents in my community who are continually saying, you know, this is not solving the problem. So, you know, when I first heard about this bill from Representative Tapke, I was very concerned about kind of the idea of train sweeps, right, where we are, and I think, you know, people spoke to this, moving people that are engaged in dangerous behavior just from one train to the other, or on the train one day, kick them off and they come back. So I think, you know, taking a balanced approach where we are really relying on violence interrupters, community-based organizations, social services is the way to go. Director Morales, I was really heartened to hear you say that we can't arrest our way out of this problem, because I really agree with that too. And I would just caution the committee to continue to kind of think about the line between potential discomfort on a train and real danger on a train. You know, I know we talk a lot about the people that are choosing not to use transit right now because they feel unsafe. And I think that that's a real issue, both in terms of, you know, just kind of making sure that this public good is being utilized by as many people as possible, but also because of the financial concerns that I know you raise about. If we don't have a lot of people riding the train, then it's just not a worthwhile financial investment. You know, I also think we have to think about the people on the train who, lots of them are my constituents, who don't have housing, right, who don't have anywhere else to go. And if we are just removing them from the public eye, removing them so that people can feel more comfortable riding the train, we're not solving that problem. And so I know that transit is not the place where those problems are created, but transit is the place where we are kind of being forced to deal with this right now. And so I think taking this approach where we are balancing, you know, support with more enforcement is the way to go. Thank you.
Thank you. I'll make a quick closing comment, unless there's anyone else. Okay, thank you. I will, in absentia, thank Representative Tapke for his bill. And Representative Sensenmira, thank you. You've been involved in the beginning, and I think really have made some important contributions and improvements here. I think there's some more work to be done, but I think the bill is in a good place, you know, for us to move it out of committee. I will say, you know, there's one other item that I hope, again, with Director Morales and others in the room, that should be addressed. You know, we've talked about a law enforcement presence. We've talked about other, you know, personnel, you know, homeless action teams, others that will be engaged here. But there's also the physical appearance of the transit infrastructure. And I think that's a really important piece. So Sunday night, I'm very late. I'm coming back from the Bruce Springsteen show at XL back to Minneapolis, and I'm taking the 21 bus at midnight, and again, you know, quite a number of homeless people, and I thought it was fine. I mean, there was, you know, I thought the driver was great, and, you know, people were getting from point A to point B. It was fine, but, you know, when I got out of the Uptown Transit Center, you know, just the appearance of the trash and the other, you know, the way it looked, and the Lake Street station, you know, the escalator's not working, and the broken glass, and again, trash. I think that's an issue for the agency to take a look at, because, you know, I think the physical appearance matters, and so I think that's a piece that hasn't been talked about that much in this conversation, and I think we need to. You know, we talk about the personnel. I think there's also, you know, the physical appearance of these facilities needs to be addressed as well. So I just wanted to put that on the record and encourage the agency to take a look at that. And that Uptown station,
And I was on the Met Council when we first dedicated that in 2001, and I think it's a good facility, and I think it enhances transit connectivity for the community. But again, I think we need to really pay attention to how these facilities look and how they're cared for and maintained. So with that, members, I will renew Representative Tabke's motion that House File 2045 as amended be re-referred to the Ways and Means Committee. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, the motion prevails. Okay, so members, we have our next meeting will be Thursday here at 8:30, and that agenda is posted, and then we will be posting today a number of bills for Friday, including a rare but important joint appearance by myself and Representative Petersburg, presenting a bill together on the post-COVID transportation study that has been delayed, but I'm sure we'll be able to get across the finish line this year, and other bills. So again, that's going to be on Friday at 8:30 in room 5 at the State Office Building. And with that, we are adjourned.